it's tough because I think you can simultaneously acknowledge that a person or that your character is not a good person, but depending on the agency of the character, you still want to see, you know, what they're going to do, and you care about what happens to them. And I think that's like above all else, you know, if you care what the character is doing and you are wondering about how they're going to succeed, if they're going to succeed, it doesn't really matter if they're bad or not.
Welcome to Speculative Sandbox, your audio playground for creative storytellers. My name is Vicky Lawn, and each episode, I and a guest will unpack a fiction trope with an eye for character development and narrative structures. Make sure to look for Speculative Sandbox on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, where you can join the conversation. Leave comments or questions, or let us know what other tropes we should cover. When the real world just doesn't cut it, let's get lost in a fictional one. Protagonists. Pro. Opposite of antagonist. They're the main characters, the heroes, the narrator. We want to root for them because, by proxy, we are them. But are they always as good as they appear? Fellow author and creator Matthew C. Brown joins me in a discussion about complex protagonists, the appeal of evil characters, and how storytelling has evolved as our interactions on social media take center stage.
Hello.
Hey, Matt. Matt or Matthew, how do you want to be referred?
Matt is perfectly fine.
All right. Well, my gosh, it's so cool to talk to you. We've been following each other for a couple of years, right?
I know. It's been, I actually went to check our, I was like, how long have we been like chatting? It's been since like 2019.
Crazy. Right when we were both in the query trenches.
We were right in the middle of the query trenches. That's right.
Yes. And so now we can both say that we are agented and now we're in the submission trenches.
I know, which is... It feels like more of the same, kind of.
It really, I remember that when it dawned on me that once I got through the query trenches, I was like, oh, I'm doing this again. And then I'm like, oh, that feeling.
And in some ways, it's more difficult.
Yes, absolutely. So, okay, well, how about you share a little bit about yourself and some of your current projects?
All right, sure. So my name is Matthew C. Brown, and I live just a little north of Boston, Massachusetts. I mostly write sci-fi fantasy novels. I currently have one book that is out on submission to editors and publishers. It is a sci-fi western that has been pitched as if The Mandalorian had a dash of velociraptors, a la Jurassic Park.
Nice. And, I remember reading that when you first pitched it, because that's where we met, was on a pitch event.
Yes, it was, because I think at the time you were also pitching a kind of western-ish themed fantasy book.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh, someone else.
yeah, exactly. But I loved your idea of combining it with velociraptors, just because it's so absurd, but in such a great way.
that was kind of the idea. Is like, how can I make something very absurd, but also like when you read it, it's like, oh, like this genuinely works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you and I also connected over a shared editor, right? Leslie Hinson.
We did. Yes. The lovely Leslie. Yes. Because I remember I had, I'd gone over a bunch of different rejections from agents and, you know, I'd edited the book maybe once or twice at that point. And I was thinking, you know, like, I don't know if I should just hang it up or and try writing a new book. And I thought, well, Vicky got signed and she had hired an editor, so why not give that a shot? And it was probably the best decision I ever made.
Absolutely. I feel very lucky that she was my first experience with an editor. Yeah. And I've asked her to be on a future episode, so people will get
great.
A chance. Yeah, we've just selected her topic. I'm really excited to chat with her as well and kind of get her out there with the writing community. So I'm sorry, carry on with your project list.
Yeah, I was just going to say I have one other book completely different from the first that I'm working on right now with a round of revisions, and that's more of a standalone ensemble fantasy.
Have you talked with your agent about that one yet?
Yes, he knows that I'm working on it, and it's just kind of like an open-ended kind of thing at the moment. I'm hoping to get it to him by the end of this month, but, life gets in the way, and then I just realize, like, oh, this part of the book needs a whole lot more work than I originally thought. So, but
Yeah.
no pressure there.
It's a process. I'm jealous of you because I wish I was there. Work in progress. I think this past couple of years I've been in a black hole of just this project. And the reason why I wanted to create this podcast and talk to people like you is to just get myself out of that and rejuvenate again. But it's just when you tell me you're like, I'm in the revisions mode, I'm like, oh, one day I'll be there.
Yeah, I mean, it took a while to get to that point because I was kind of the same as you. After I finished the sci-fi western and I was pitching it, and for a long time afterward, I was really trying to work on other things, and it just nothing was really sticking to the wall. And I acknowledge now some of that, part of that was just life stuff happening. But then I was just getting so frustrated. I thought maybe I only had one book in me. And then this most the fantasy was the one, the first book that I finished since the Western. And so I was like, oh geez, okay, so I can do this. So
That's great. That's a
it was
great
kind of a
feeling.
relief. Yeah.
Yeah, especially because the process of even getting an agent in the first place, it feels like lightning has to strike in the right spot, and now you're being asked to do it again. So it's
Yeah,
intimidating.
it is.
Okay, so and then you're also working on a follow-up, right? Your Western?
Yes, I do actually. Yes, I have a sequel to it. It is the rough draft is finished, and it's just kind of marinating for a while until I'm ready to actually look at it, because that thing took me, I tried to start that immediately after finishing the first book, which was maybe not a great idea. And I struggled with that on and off for, I don't know, like 3.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It took me so long. And I'm just like, with everything about this is terrible, and I don't know where it's going, and it's not working out as easily as the first book. But then finally, late last year, I was kind of reading it over, and it's like, all right, I'm gonna finish this. I don't care what it looks like. I don't care how bad it is. I just need to get it all out onto paper. And finally did it, and then I just put it away, and I'm not gonna look at it until I'm ready to look at it. But it is done.
And that's a really good approach to take, getting just going straight forward. It's like you're pushing your way through a blizzard, eyes forward. And as long as you can just get through it, then you at least have something you can edit later.
Yep, exactly. And edit, everything can be fixed in post.
Exactly. So then you've had your fair share of different kinds of stories, whether it's your original Western, your fantasy, or a follow-up, which can be so challenging too, because you don't want to write the same book twice, but you want to expand on your existing world. So you've had your fair share of writing protagonists.
Oh yeah.
So tell that's what this episode is about. We're looking at the complexity of protagonists, both obviously good protagonists, obviously bad protagonists, and some that surprise you. So how about you share some of your favorite protagonists in general?
So I'm just fresh off of finishing the book Rhythm of War by Brandon Sanderson. It's the fourth in his Stormlight Archive series. The really big, like 130,000 pages, whatever it is. But one of the characters, there's a lot of characters, but one of my favorites is Kaladin Stormblessed, and he's just, there's so much about him that feels like kind of the typical fantasy heroic protagonist, and that he's just so easy to like and root for. He's an underdog, and when you first meet him, his life just absolutely sucks. And you want to see, and you just keep seeing him overcoming adversity, one challenge after another, and you're like, how's he doing any of this, and like, where's it going to lead? And it's just there's a reason why, in every single book, the spotlight might shift a little bit to focus on some other characters, but he's always the one. I feel like people are just really like, I want to see what Kaladin is doing in this book.
So for Kaladin, do you find that the way that he's written, it's easy to relate to him? You see a little bit of yourself in him?
Absolutely. And I think that's something, you don't always get that with these heroic protagonists, because a lot of times it's the reason we look up to them. And I mean, it's like, people looking up to people loving Superman. It's like, well, it's like because he's Superman and he can do anything and he's great and he symbolizes hope, but he's not extremely relatable, or at least in most depictions he's not. But in this case, Kaladin, a lot of his plot is focused on his mental health. And just the toll that a lot of his challenges take on him. And I feel like we don't always get a lot of that with these protagonists, because we see them, they go through so many things and like life and death situations, and sometimes it gets touched on. But I think from the get-go, they're talking about how hopeless he feels, and even after he overcomes the challenge, he feels great for a while, but then he's, right back down the drain because one bad thing goes wrong.
Do you think that this book is obvious about the mental health struggles, or do you think it's a more subtle implication that the reader has to pick up on?
I didn't really think about it as much until later books. At the very beginning, the very first book, I don't think mental health is quite as obvious as a theme, mostly because for him, it's just, I mean, his life is terrible. So, of course, mentally, he's not going to be in tip-top shape. And I mean, that would be the case with anybody. But as the books move forward, and you see this with other characters too. It kind of tackles a couple different health issues, things like PTSD. Even at some point, we even get into a dissociative identity disorder. But I think, the more time you spend with them, the more you realize, like, oh yeah, like, he's got a lot of issues, and he's it takes more than one book or one success to kind of, work through them, just like it would in real life.
I have a book series that I relate to a lot for that very same reason. It's called John Dies at the End. It's written by Jason Pargan, and it's one of those supernatural humor novels about two guys that have to save their little shithole town from the forces of evil over and over again. And the way that they get the ability to fight off evil spirits is they basically take this drug that gives them the ability to see into like the supernatural. But the point of the story is that you see a lot of the side effects and mental health impacts of living in a very poor rural town. You see depression, you see alcoholism. But what was remarkable about it is you don't see it right away, but you do see it in like the aura around the characters. And then just like in your example, the later books, Jason starts to outwardly explore it and showing how alcoholism and anxiety and depression can be debilitating, and sometimes the hero can't get up, he just stays in bed all day. And sometimes that biggest o accomplishment is overcoming that period of depression.
Yeah, and I think and it's interesting that you say that. Like you were saying, Alec, how he just kind of wants to lay in bed because you might not think that that's really something you want to see in your protagonist.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of an interesting way to acknowledge the nuances of the perfect protagonist, and it kind of shows progress over time, getting away from, back in the day with the Greek gods being, your protagonist, and now you get to these very human characters that see more and more of us. What other protagonists do you like?
I mean, it's so hard not to like Luke Skywalker.
I was thinking of Luke
Yeah,
Skywalker
it's
too.
just so hard not to like him. I mean, just everything about him. I mean, and just from the classic kind of hero's journey perspective. But I even, and I love even how he ends up in the sequel trilogy in The Last Jedi, and not everybody loved what they did with him there, but I absolutely loved that as a, the finishing to his character arc.
I agree. I feel like when it comes to the Jedi and reaching the ultimate level of Jedi-ness, I guess you can say it seems like it's a mark of true accomplishment to become one with the Force.
Exactly.
And I should probably say there's so many spoilers all around these podcasts. I'll
Oh
put that in
yeah, we should probably
disclaimer
ra
officially.
raise th we should probably raise that now. Yeah, although if you haven't seen The Last Jedi at this point, it's just kind of like, I don't know how you avoided the internet arguing for so long.
Very true. I was thinking about Luke Skywalker as well, and I was thinking about Return of the Jedi, which was the
Yes.
third one, right? And
Yes.
how, unfortunately, the way that I saw the movies was they were being played over and over on cable, and so I saw the ending before I ever actually saw the full movie. And so I had to find out that his struggle between the light and the dark was a huge theme in that movie, until you find out at the end he has the white underlayer of his jacket that
Yes.
he's there for good. And so I feel robbed of that experience because I guess for a point you didn't know which way Luke was going to go.
Oh, totally. And I mean, right from the get-go, I mean, you see him, he makes his entrance in the movie and he's wearing all black. He's got a black cloak and he doesn't look really like the Luke that we previously saw in Empire. And he's so cool and confident, and you're wondering, it's like, the whole point of that clothing was like, is he gonna turn? Is that gonna happen?
Well, and then we saw the transition, right, from the perfect hero, an example of a hero and a protagonist in Luke from the first original trilogy to this latest trilogy, where you start to actually see weaknesses, cracks
Sure.
in the form. And I think that's where a lot of disputes came in, because now they were seeing their protagonist be a little bit more complex.
Right. I think a lot of that came from the fact that, in the first trilogy, he is very much an optimist for the entire thing, like not giving up, like even when, spoilers, I guess, even when he finds out that like Vader's his father and, everyone is telling him like, look, he's gone. He's not your dad anymore. Like he can't come back. And he's like, I don't believe that. And he succeeds. So like, that's like the ultimate mark of an optimist. So when people were like, well, then how could he like suddenly like not be an optimist? And I was like, well, people, things can change in 30 years, man. Like people are not always the same after like 3 decades pass by.
I mean, I'm only in my 30s, but I feel much more bitter about the world than I was when I was a teenager.
No kidding.
Okay, so let's see. I have listed a couple of my pr favorite protagonists as well. I listed some that I felt were really good model examples for women. I really
Sure.
enjoyed Nomi in American Gothic, where in times where women were powerless, politically, socially, I like being able to see these female characters overcome and assert themselves. Was a very interesting book. I'm sorry, I might have misspoken. I wrote American Gothic in my notes. It is Mexican Gothic. She goes up against a racist family who believed in eugenics, which was, a terrible belief system about one race being superior to another. And so not only is she a woman in this circumstance, but she's overcoming this kind of conflict. And I thought she just showed a great example of a strong female woman. And then my other example that I really like to talk about was a really good pairing between male and female characters. It's not a book, it's a movie. It's The Mummy from 1999 with Evelyn and Rick O'Connell. I thought they were such a great example of how these two characters can bounce off of each other, their strengths, a very positive male-female partnership.
My wife is going to be so happy when she listens to this episode and hears the example you just gave. That is like her favorite movie.
It's such a good movie,
It just
and
really
I feel
is.
like it's continued to do really well, today when you watch it, and just the themes and all those things. So,
Of course.
okay, so then we've talked about protagonists, we've given some good examples about it. We started kind of going into how areas of gray start to enter as protagonistic stories, progress. But what would you say the purpose of the duality of protagonist and antagonist serve in a story?
I think, well, the most obvious thing, the duality is just, you have opposing forces. Usually, in any context, a protagonist or an antagonist, doesn't matter, which one is the hero or villain, so to speak, but, they are opposing each other to some degree. And, the whole point of the story is usually you have a person you're following, they want something. That's the easiest way to get someone to root for your characters, that they want something, they want it really badly. Yeah, do you have someone who either wants to prevent them from doing that or wants something that runs completely opposite of what the protagonist wants?
So then it's an interesting perspective of the protagonist's viewpoint versus the antagonist's viewpoint, and the assumption that we might be making that, oh, the protagonist, the pro, is wanting something good, and therefore the antagonist is probably going for something bad.
Exactly.
Okay, so then what do you think is more important when you are writing the story? Is it the author's intentions of the characters or the reader's interpretation?
It's a really difficult question because I think a lot of it really just depends on context. There's just some things that, I think as a writer, you can go into something having a certain intention, but it can be difficult because, a lot of times when you're putting it down on paper, you don't have everything fully formed. I think especially with characters, you can't have everything fully formed when you start writing. I think, depending on how depending on how your style is, like if you like the outline or if you kind of just, you know, if you're a gardener, just write everything without planning. Even if you wanted to plan out every single thing that happens in the story, you know, the everything that happens beginning, middle, end, I think it's hard to really get everything with your character right off the bat. Like, because they're not these static things. They're the things that you might develop over time, and you realize later in your writing, like, oh, I didn't realize this. And that might change your intention as you're writing.
Isn't that great when a character just takes a life of its own mid-draft and you're like, oh, hello, what are you doing?
Sometimes, except for when you're just kind of like, wait, I really do need you over here, right?
Exactly. So how do you feel about that nebulous environment where you're kind of not really sure yet? Do you find it scary, exhilarating?
It depends, because sometimes, for myself, I don't tend to do a whole lot of outlining. I sometimes have like little bits and pieces of what I know I want to happen in the story. Maybe a set piece here. Maybe this is where I think I want things to end up. Maybe I want this one shocking event to happen right before the third act. But most everything else, I just kind of take it and run. But I think, it is fun when I realize like, oh, like this character has way more to say than I thought they originally did. And I get to do a little more with them, or it gets turned about completely. And I realize like, oh, wait, I think that like they might not be everything that I thought they were when I started writing this.
When you are drafting your protagonist, how much of it do you find that it becomes a self-reflection on you and your own outlook on the world and perspectives and ethics?
I think in some cases it does. I think it's just because, you know, I haven't really written a protagonist yet that goes completely against like my perspectives. You know, I've written POV characters that are obviously, you know, more villainous, and that's a whole other case. But, you know, like in the first book I wrote, like, you know, my protagonist, her name is Willa, and she's, you know, she's very, you know, she's this sense of justice and like how things, you know, should be, like what is right and what is wrong, like, and seeing it at face value. But, you know, sometimes what we see at face value might not be 100% accurate in terms of how we see right and wrong. And it's tough to remember that sometimes.
So then in the challenge of creating an evil protagonist, how much do you think the goal is to create a narrative where their evil perspective is convincing in order for them to be the protagonist?
In order for the villain to be the protagonist?
Yeah, if the protagonist is not a good person, is that the challenge then?
I don't think it's tough, because I think you can simultaneously acknowledge that a person or that your character is not a good person, but depending on the agency of the character, you still want to see what they're going to do, and you care about what happens to them. And I think that's like above all else, you know, if you care what the character is doing and you are wondering about how they're going to succeed, if they're going to succeed, it doesn't really matter if they're bad or not.
I like to think a lot about Thanos. And if I had to write his, as if he was the hero of his own story, but clearly what he's doing is pretty messed up. How would you approach him if he was your protagonist and his overall philosophy, no matter how evil it is?
I mean, I think that really, like, Infinity War really is the Thanos movie. Like, he goes on a hero's journey for that whole movie. It starts with him, like, his goal is, I am setting out to try and, you know, however misguided you think his ideal is, like, I have a goal, and it involves, quote-unquote, saving the universe. Mm-hmm. I have to collect all these, you know, MacGuffins, and I have to face challenges along the way. He has to make a sacrifice, and it is a pretty big sacrifice. He has to sacrifice his adoptive daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does that. He faces a final challenge. He succeeds, and then he goes home.
That's a great analysis. I definitely see where you're coming from there. I never saw it that way. Now it kind of makes me question any opportunity where you know there's a villain in a story, and being able to flip the script on it a little bit and seeing what it looks like from the other person's perspective. Because Infinity War, of course, is being told from the Avengers' perspective. But meanwhile, you're right. The hero's journey is reflected in Thanos. That's great. Okay, so then when you develop your protagonist, where do you typically start? And what relationship do you want them to have with the reader?
I mean, first and foremost, I want the reader to care about them. But I also want them to know that they, you know, that they're not capable of necessarily winning every situation. You know, they might not know everything that they need to do. There might be something that they're not sure about, or that they're going to make a mistake, which can be challenging because sometimes it's so, there's times when you're reading and, you know, because you're the reader and because you can tell what's going to happen. Sometimes you know that the protagonist is going to make a mistake, or you know that they're, you know, saying something or making a choice that's, you know, not ideal. And you're like, oh no, like, why are you doing that? But instead of it being, you know, annoying, which can happen if you're not careful, it's more just kind of like, oh, how are they going to learn from this, or how are they going to fix this?
Do you like to squirm a little bit when they read these interactions?
Sometimes it depends on what they're talking about or who they're dealing with. You know, it is kind of funny when, like, you put them in a situation. It's just a little bit, it's just awkward enough that you're just kind of like, oh, like, you're burying your hands. Like, I can't watch this, but I'm watching between my fingers because I want to know what happens.
And which is a great place to put your readers, I think, where you can surprise them enough and keep them on the edge of their seat where they really, they don't know what to expect, but they have to read more to find out.
Exactly.
I love and enjoy relatable, flawed, and earnest characters. Those when I'm writing my stories, and the genre that I write in is own voice, so a lot of it has to come from the diversity perspective, which is challenging for me because at the point that I'm reading things now, I'm not seeing a lot of diversity voices in what I'm writing specifically, which is sci-fi women's fiction, which right. I think is also kind of a unique genre as well. So I'm taking a lot of risk, and the only place that I can really pull from is my own experiences. And my biggest insecurity is, like, I don't know what I'm doing. And the best thing I could do is, well, my protagonists don't know what they're doing either. And maybe the best way to approach this is it's well known and the reader knows. And now we're in this together, you know, and it's an adventure. I'm also the mother of two daughters. And I want my daughters to grow up and read stories knowing that mistakes happen and that no one's perfect. And ultimately, it's about how you overcome challenges.
Do you feel like you ever, do you feel like you kind of sometimes write for your daughters in a way?
I find that in the, my story subjects have a lot to do with women's relationships. So my book that's currently on submission is about a mother and daughter who are estranged and they have to figure out how to survive this supernatural, you know, alien invasion thing. And as I'm working my way through that dynamic, I'm learning a lot from my own relationship with my girls. And it feeds into each other a lot. And because I'm exploring these female relationships, I'm taking what I'm learning in real life and applying them. But at the same time, I'm also learning from my characters because I'm not in these supernatural circumstances, but you can kind of see how things you kind of learn from each other, whether it's therapy or overcoming conflict, how that can be translated to something super absurd. Because in the end, it's all about how do you maintain positive relationships? How do you grow together? From a daughter's perspective, I know I wanted a mother who supported me. And in the mother's role, I know that I want to make sure my daughters feel that same support. And how can I feed into my daughter's needs that I might not actually know about, you know, and being constantly open. I think the greatest thing about being a writer is you open yourself up to your character's needs. And your characters aren't always you, and you have to, what makes them tick and what their challenges are. And so I think writers are incredibly perceptive, and I find that to be very beneficial in my own relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so now we know about good protagonists. So let's talk about bad protagonists.
Yes.
What's on your list?
I have to pick my unequivocally favorite bad protagonist, as in there's nothing redeemable about him whatsoever. It is Macbeth of the titular The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Did you see the latest movie that came
I
out?
Did, yes, because I anytime anyone is doing anything with Macbeth, I gotta watch it.
Okay, so tell me your analysis on what makes him such a good protagonist.
So, I mean, so first of all, it's the fact that, you know, a lot of the play is centered around his ambition. And, you know, do the ends justify the means kind of thing. I mean, it literally starts like we were literally told about him before we meet him. And he's like, he's this hero. He's like single-handedly won this war against this rebellious thane. And he's great. He's great. Everyone loves him. And he shows up. And then the Witcher's kind of like, hey, like, you're going to be king. And he's like, huh, well, I never thought about that. And then it just all goes downhill from there. And you know, it's just one thing after the next, you know, and I know a lot of people like to talk about Lady Macbeth, and she is of course a fantastic character, and she is a villainess in her own right, but she's really only, her biggest thing is the fact that she's pushing him to murder Duncan, when he's kind of expressing doubt, which is something that you would see in your protagonist when they're just like, they're about to kind of take the leap. You know, on their journey, and that's what he has. He's about to take the leap, and he's like, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure about this. And she's like, what's wrong with you? Like, just grow a pair and go stab him.
So is Macbeth a character that could have been, that could balance between a bad character and a good character just based off of opportunities and where he could choose to change?
I think a lot of that depends. It's really complex with Shakespeare, because different interpretations and depictions of the character can put a lot of different flavor and make you see them in very different lights. Because I would say, so for example, the newest one with Denzel Washington, he is very much a classic depiction of Macbeth, where he's just, you know, decides to kill Duncan. And from there on, it's just him trying to secure his position as king, does not want to lose power, and like just very classic murderous evil protagonist thing. There's another version. Sorry, keep going.
No, I was just going to say, does the characterization of Macbeth give you ideas on how you would want to formulate or make complicated a protagonist character yourself?
Sometimes, I think sometimes it depends on just how you want to tinker with them. A lot of it, I think motivation is a big thing here, because in the if you're looking at the play at face value, like, what's his motivation to become king? It's like, just he wants power. It's like, okay, that's something that, you know, I think most villains, you know, regardless of whether they're the protagonist or antagonist, can want, you know, they want power. I would say even like a hero, like, you know, don't they always want to become powerful for one reason or another, even if it's, you know, even if it's for a quote unquote good reason?
That's a good point.
Yeah. There's another version of Macbeth starring Michael Fassbender. And in that version, Macbeth is more of this kind of broken kind of person, even before the movie starts. It is implied in the play, because Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are childless. And, you know, they kind of make references every now and then to them being childless, but they don't go too deep into it. In this particular version, the Fassbender version, the film starts with them burying a stillborn child, which is not included in the original play. But that puts a whole new perspective on motivations of these characters.
Interesting. So they come from a place of hurt.
Yeah, it comes from a place of, and it's extremely relatable, which is, it's way more relatable than just the want to rise to power. Because I think, you know, anyone who has ever lost a child, or, you know, suffered loss in general, but I think in this particular case, you know, losing a child is a particular kind of hurt that no one should ever have to experience. But, you know, you feel bad for anybody that would lose their child. And so when you see him going about, all these things he's doing, you know, like, it doesn't necessarily make it okay, of course, because, you know, murdering people, like, isn't okay regardless of what's happening to you, but it does kind of, you know, change the character a little bit, because, you know, he's already in such a broken state, clearly, like, you know, suffering you know, depression, and, you know, watching him go about this business, you know from the get-go what it is fueled by, and it's not just this ambition for power kind of thing.
That makes for a really good transition for now protagonists that aren't just necessarily bad. In fact, they could be good, but there's nuance to them now. And in this case, we know Macbeth is supposed to have dark intentions, but with this new color added to the storyline and making it his story, to him, he could be the hero of his own show. Meanwhile, he's the villain to others. So yep. Are there any other characters that you could think of that were maybe presented as positive, good people, but then once you step back and looked at them, you're like, oh, I'm kind of questioning this. Maybe they're not so good.
So that's another classic example for me. It's Victor Frankenstein.
Okay.
And a lot of it has to do with kind of, you know, just, you know, a lot of it is you're dealing with a lot of the lens of, you know, Frankenstein as being like, it has been the subject of many a monster films, you know, and it's like the Frankenstein monster, and just, you know, it's like monster, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's the monster, and he's killing people. And, you know, I think the key thing with that makes Victor so complex is that, so obviously he goes about creating the monster, and that's, you know, the insane event is that he is able to bring it to life. And then he's immediately like, oh man, shit, this was a terrible idea. And, you know, he just pieces out of there and leaves the monster to fend, the creature to fend for itself. But the thing is, like, that doesn't automatically make him good or bad, because heroes make, or I should say protagonists make mistakes all the time. And a lot of times they make a mistake that is the inciting event. Like they mess something up and then they're like, oh man, like, I gotta fix it. But in this case, Victor does not fix it. And I think that's what makes him as more of a, more of a bad protagonist, because he spends the whole book just shirking responsibility for this thing he's created. And he's given multiple opportunities to try and fix it, and he just does not do it.
The idea that there's a monster, but who's really the monster?
Exactly. Classic cyclical in nature kind of thing. And a lot of that has to do with the fact, because it's like, yeah, the creature does murder people. But a lot of it's because, like, it doesn't really understand. It's literally just been brought to life, doesn't really understand what's going on, doesn't understand why people are running away from it in terror, until it takes a look to a body of water. It's like, oh man, I look like shit. Like, man, I would run for me. Oh my God. And like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that would be pretty, that's got, like, you got to feel kind of bad for the creature. And like, when he comes to Victor and he's like, look, you made me, like, you know, and you abandoned me, and like, and I have had a really terrible time so far, so here's the deal, build me a mate and I'll go about my business and leave everybody alone, and you'll never hear from me again. And Victor's just like, I'm not gonna do that. So then the monster keeps killing people, and Victor's just kind of like, why would you do this, you evil, evil thing?
It's such a tragedy. Okay, so I'm going to bring up a bit of a, what's the best word? Volatile, I'm trying to think of the right word here, but I'm just going to bring it up. This is a character that is supposed to be good, and everyone freaked out when this character went bad. But my question is, were they always bad? It's Daenerys Targaryen.
Oh, man. Oh, this is going to be... This is going to be a hot button topic, I can already tell.
Now, we can acknowledge, you know, the story writing of the last season felt rushed. You know, all the politics that go into that. I'm curious about, have you read the books?
I have. I'm all caught up on the books.
I've read the books a while ago, and I've read analysis on Daenerys' character, and I know that before it became a show, there was already discourse over Daenerys' character in the message boards, whether or not she was truly a good or bad character based off of the conditions of her upbringing. Right. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I very much in agreement that, you know, the eighth season, like, did leave something to be desired. I don't think that her, what do I say? Like, I don't think that the way Daenerys was written was done the best of their ability. I think they needed more time to really fully develop that kind of turn. Hmm. But the actual result itself, like Daenerys, you know, burning down all of King's Landing and making, just being, getting this totalitarian regime, that I did not, that did not bother me. That I totally was like, yeah, that tracks. Because mm-hmm. I definitely thought way back when I was reading the books, and just like you, this was a while ago I read them. I kept getting the feeling, especially in the later books, that, you know, there were just things happening, just like, oh, I don't know. Like, I didn't necessarily know if she was going to be a, you know, full-blown murder rampage, but I was kind of like, I do not think she's a very good leader. You know, I think she can inspire, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, make you a great leader. It just means, like, it could just mean you're good at manipulating people.
Yeah, I was looking back at earlier books and chapters where how she handled the slave owners, for example, and how I found it to be so interesting, her reliance on advisors and yes. a lot of the volatility involved in that. And I liked the idea of her going full-fledged evil. I would have loved a season dedicated to that. Yeah,
as it stood, it just really, like, they just, like, rushed it to enough time. You know, I mean, I know that, like, the biggest thing was the fact that a lot of people she cared about kept dying. And I mean, that is, you know, an important thing. You know, she has people that she's trusted for, you know, some of the most important moments of the show, and they die. You know, that does suck, but it's also like everybody else lost people important too, and not everybody, like, immediately turned into, I mean, think about John. Like, John has, like, seen so many friends and family, like, he had family slaughtered. He's, yeah, you know, it's terrible for him, but he was still just kind of like, yep, I'm gonna, he even realized, like, oh, Danny may not be doing the best job right now.
Exactly. So what kind of protagonist do you think is more interesting to viewers, to readers currently? We've talked about those Luke Skywalkers of the world where they're just good. And then we've talked about bad ones like Thanos, Macbeth. But what do you think people are wanting now? Do they want someone that's more nuanced like Daenerys Targaryen, or do they want something more black and white? What are your thoughts?
I mean, it depends on what you're talking about, obviously. You know, everyone's going to like different characters for different situations, but I do think at the end of the day, people just love debate or argue, whatever you want to call it. And when you have a character that you can argue about, that makes for a very interesting protagonist. So, you know, you obviously have people like Peter Parker. Like, everybody loves Peter Parker. Like, I don't think there's really anyone that would go about saying that Peter Parker, you know, there's not much dispute about if he's good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, everyone loves him. You know, he might have made mistakes, he might have flaws, but I don't think there's really, you know, any way to discredit his character. But then you have other characters, and if we're going to stay on the Marvel track, you have characters like Loki, who, I mean, he doesn't really get to be a proper protagonist until his own TV series, but I mean, people loved Loki even when he was the villain.
Oh, I love Loki. I'm a huge Loki fan.
And why wouldn't you? Like, he's charismatic, and I mean, who doesn't love Tom Hiddleston? But, like, mm-hmm. I mean, he has done some pretty bad things. I mean, he, you know, tried to, like, bring on an army into New York City and just ruin the whole world and, like, kill people. And it wasn't a great look, but it's also like, hey, he's Loki. Like, what are you going to do? And not that I think too many people spend time debating Loki, but I do think he has just so many different facets to him, especially like when you get to the TV series, and now it's like, okay, we're sympathetic for him on a lot of things, but there's other things where it's like, okay, you are still a trickster god. Like that, I've not lost sight of that.
That's a really good point. And I'm thinking now about a lot of franchises that benefited from the discussions, like Twilight, for example, Euphoria. And if we want to really look at it, the heart of every single reality show, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, the idea that there's discussion that comes out of everything.
Yeah.
When I looked at this question, I looked at it from almost an age audience approach. So when you're a kid, at least when I was a kid, the kind of books I was reading, you were seeing positive, optimistic, good protagonists everywhere. You got your main characters in Disney Channel. You got your kids in family movies. There's a lot of morality. And then you get older and suddenly the characters get more nuanced. So in young adult fiction, the bad boy is just misunderstood, right? Where bad characters can become good. But there does seem to also be a lot of morality there as well. And then you get to the adult content. And that's when I started getting exposure to Breaking Bad, Walter White.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the idea that was he, I love that. It just dawned on me. I'm so stupid. Walter White, you know, the symbolism of being a good guy, a teacher, you know. And then he turns into the villain. He is the villain of the story.
He is.
But it's like, was he bad the whole time? Or was there that transition? Or was he just becoming more of himself? You know, the Dexter storyline where is he good because he's a murderer killing other murderers? Or is he just bad? Like, there's no other way to look at it.
No,
go ahead.
The fun thing about Walter White that I always like to point out is, you know, a lot of fans, you know, the show, like, talk about how much they, like, hate his wife. And, like, there's, like, man, she's such a bitch, like, all the time. And it's, like, buddy, like, you're rooting for a guy who cooks meth. Like, and you're telling her that, like, I mean, it's, like, yeah, like, she's made, like, yeah, she does some things in the show that, like, I'm just kind of, like, like, I don't know, like, wasn't such a great idea. But, like, is she really a bad person? Is she really as bad as Walt?
Isn't that amazing how the storyline twists you into thinking that?
Exactly. And it's because Walt's the protagonist. So, and it's kind of what I was saying earlier. It's like, because Walter wants to do these things. He has all these wants and these things he's trying to accomplish. And she gets in the way of a lot of that. So it's like, yeah, we're kind of like geared to be like, ah, damn it. Like, she found out about this. And it's just kind of like, yeah, but she's not doing anything wrong.
How much do you think was deliberate, like tone control? Scripting, how much of it do you think they wanted us to not like her as much as possible because they were feeding into that narrative?
I mean, I think they had to have been known what they were doing, because she kind of fits, especially early on, she kind of fits into this like nagging wife kind of stereotype, especially early on. And it's especially hard when it's like, you know, he's like, you know, when Walt can't really connect with her when he first is like, you know, going through the cancer diagnosis and stuff like that. And, you know, she's just kind of off in her own little world, and all she cares about is that she's pregnant and la la la. So we're already having a disconnect because Walter has the disconnect. I do think, and yeah, exactly. So I think that, you know, she certainly was meant to be depicted a specific way. I just think over time, fans, you know, of course, the more invested they get in the show, the more they care about Walter and like see him succeed. And the more and more, no matter what she does, it's going to be like, why does she keep screwing everything up?
That's so, and I feel like that's, you're seeing more stories like that now where things are so nuanced. So, for example, retellings of classic stories. This is this is more family friendly, I guess you could say. But Once Upon a Time, the TV show, that huge hit on ABC, they made Red Riding Hood the wolf, you know, and they started saying,
wow.
Yeah, so they started bringing up familiar characters that you once revered and thought were wonderful, iconic characters. And then they started introducing concepts and issues, which I think, you know, do make them more relatable. And I guess the question goes, if a protagonist has more of a dark side, is that a reflection of us as people?
That's really interesting. Yeah. Wow. I never really thought about that. I'm still kind of hung up on the. I'm just kind of hung up on the Red Riding Hood, Big Bad Wolf. That really is a great kind. You know, I never really watched a lot of the show, but I know like some of the twisty turns they did with the characters. Like I know they made Hook, who is like this quintessential villain, into, you know, people loved him, and Peter Pan was more like this creepy. Like almost like supernatural creature.
Yes. Oh, I loved how they approached Peter Pan. It was so sinister. And I love things like that. And so, yeah, part of me is like thinking, are we all as battling this good and evil? And are we bored by just the straight good like Superman? Because quite honestly, I get bored with Superman. I like the more nuanced Batman, who seems like a hot mess, you know? So,
because he is a hot mess. He just really is.
And speaking of nuanced bad protagonists, or nuanced protagonists in general, do you think Batman could actually do more good as the wealthy billionaire versus the guy that just beats people up at night?
I know. This is one that like I see all the time. And it's like, yeah, it really is so interesting, especially when you look at the many different versions of, Batman and because there's been so many different ways that Bruce Wayne has been depicted and like ways that he, sometimes he's put in a bit more positive light. Sometimes he's a little more cynical. I do think in a lot of different stories, like I think particularly in the, I think in the Nolan Batman universe in particular, it feels like there's a lot of more like, why didn't you just do this with your money? In particular. And I think a lot of that has to do with because like that movie really spends a lot more time like talking about like Wayne Enterprises and all the different tech that he has. Especially like I think it's really hard to ignore that in the Dark Knight Rises, because the discussion of class is such a big theme in that particular movie. And it's hard not to think about the fact that it's like, yeah, Bruce, you kind of are part of the 1% there. Mm-hmm. Like I know you're still, you're trying to stop Bane from murdering people, which is good, but it's also hard to ignore the fact that, yeah, you're a billionaire. You're not really the underdog here.
So with each retelling of these stories, we're seeing the evolution. These characters are changing. They're a little bit more colorful. They reflect a little bit more of society. What kind of nuanced character development do you think we'll see for protagonists in the future, looking forward?
I think that I was thinking about this, and I actually ended up kind of going back towards like the mental health trauma recovery themes that I mentioned earlier. Because I think that really is a big thing. I think it's kind of, this is almost like an answer to when you were saying, like, I get bored with the Superman protagonist kind of things. Because, like, they are, like, they kind of are a little too stoic, and a lot of their problems are external.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you take, like, these superheroic characters, and even, like, antagonists, it wasn't my favorite movie, but I know a lot of people talk about the Joker movie and like the themes of mental health issues surrounding that particular protagonist was an important discussion. But I feel like with the, exploring that particular subject, especially over a long period of time with certain characters, can kind of, make a shift from like a character, they're just strictly heroic, or, they're just strictly villainous. And make them a bit more complex and like a lot more to discuss and make them more relatable.
I like that. I think right now, and we've talked about this recently, people enjoy dissecting characters, public figures, until they're 50 Shades of Grey, right? They start out one way and then we pick them apart. But what it's interesting right now is we as individuals are entering the public sphere as stories in ourselves. So we have social media, we have our websites. We're all building our own narrative. You and I as writers have our public presence, right? And what we want other people to perceive as us as writers. And I'm seeing a blurred line between personal and PR personas and the stories that they carry. And as people enter that sphere, that public sphere, and people get their stories from each other now, not necessarily written, but, we're thinking TikTok personalities. Part of me wonders, would that inform even more of nuanced character development? Will it become even more blurred? Is it really difficult to be a good or a bad character? Especially since public TikTok personalities are constantly getting broken down from one image to the other. What are your thoughts on that? It's kind of random.
But it's a really good point, because we do want to portray ourselves in a certain way on like the world stage. And, obviously, there are more people that are a bit more visible than others for one reason or another, whether it's because they just have a large online following or they're an influencer or whatnot. But, it's just we all want to kind of, you know, show ourselves in a certain way. And it's kind of, it can be hard to do that and come across as genuine. You know, you were kind of talking about the whole like PR speak, and it's kind of like, yeah, I especially when it comes to, you know, because I mainly use Twitter to connect with the writing community and, you know, all that stuff. And sometimes I'll just tweet about some random personal anecdote and it'll just be silly. But, you know, I do want to try to engage, but a lot of times I'll see some see discussions going on and people that are also trying to engage. And sometimes it just feels so stilted and forced. And, you know, it's like I've seen sometimes I'll see questions like, you know, hashtag writing community. Do you ever get like stuck writing a book? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Because I'm a writer. And that just like, next question, please. And, you know, yeah. It's like, and it's all in you. And it's all for, I think it's all to just, you know, they're trying to get followers, they're trying to get engagements and whatever. And it's like, okay, you know, that is your prerogative. But, you know, I want more meaningful discussion. Mm-hmm. Like if I comment on something that you're talking about, or, you know, if I follow you, it's because I'm genuinely interested in what you're saying and what you're offering. And I'm not just trying to do it just because I'm just like, this is Twitter and you follow me, I follow you back or whatever. You know, it's like you post about a book. You know, there was like one book you know, that I saw recently, and then I can't remember the name for it now, of course, mm-hmm. but I was just like, you know, all I saw was the book cover and like the author tweeting like, it's coming out tomorrow. I'm just like, ooh, it has swords on the cover. Like, I want to know about that.
Yeah.
You know, and I like the attitude of the author. So I'm going to follow them and keep this book on the radar. And I like, you know, the way that they were kind of, you know, presenting themselves.
It seems like
it's got a little long-winded.
No worries. It seems like the online 360 and live. So when it comes to things like character development and what we experience now as in our own lived stories and what mm-hmm. we hope to see in stories, no one takes you at face value anymore.
No.
You know, and it just, does that mean that we're now in the world of group character development? Because once again, it's back to that question of, is it about your intent or the reader's interpretation?
Oh yeah. You know, and especially like with yourself, like it's so, cause like, you know, so many people, like you gotta be careful because you might, you know, if you don't take more than a few seconds to say something before you type it up, it's like someone could take it the wrong way. And, you know, and then that could hurt someone even. And then mm-hmm. you're in a whole other bit of trouble. Cause even if you didn't mean it, you know, I genuinely believe like, you know, people do make mistakes and they do misspeak, but it is much, much harder to backtrack from that mm-hmm. or to fix that. You know, if it just, you know, like if I, you know, if I'm talking with a friend and I say something wrong and I'm like, ah, shit, like that wasn't right, like I'm sorry or something like that. If I say it on Twitter and like 1,000 people see it and retweet it and share it all the place, and I'm just like, oh, like that was bad. That was really, really bad. Maybe I should have like thought that through. And I think sometimes that's just like a lot of those situations are just born out of the fact that we feel like we have to keep adding to our online persona, our character development. And we just think this is just another piece of that. And it's just kind of like, yeah, like, well, not everybody needs to know every single step along the way.
We have to find that perfect balance, right? Of controversialness that doesn't steep too far the point of character assassination, right? So when we're talking exactly. about the Loki, the Bella, the Euphoria, yeah. we got to find that balance in our own personal.
If yeah, we want to, we sure do.
Get that conversation going. Okay, well, that was pretty much the questions I had for you. Is there yeah. anything else that you'd like to add?
Let me think about it here. Anything else I'd like to add? Oh, I don't know. I could go on about all this stuff forever and ever, but you know, there's only so much time. But no, I just think, you know, I just kind of think, you know, just piggybacking off of what we were saying before, like we, you know, I love honest engagement, you know, and I love hearing other people's stories and seeing what they have to offer. So I think, you know, in the case of, you know, kind of like what you're saying, like intent, versus like, you know, your intent versus what people interpret. It's like, you know, you just gotta think about other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Thank you so much for being my guest on this podcast series. Yes. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's just been so great to get to, you know, actually speak with you after all this time.
Yeah, that is really exciting. And I wish you lots of luck on your book as it's
going
through.
Well, I've been wanting to read your book for so long. I really can't wait to eventually have it in my hands.
Well, okay, fingers crossed for both of us. Yeah. And hopefully sometime in the future, if you want to come back for another episode, I'd love to have you back.
I'd absolutely love to.
Speculative Sandbox is a volunteer-run podcast that relies on the collaboration of fellow creators like yourselves. Join the conversation by following us on Twitter and Instagram. Interested in being in a future episode? Email speculativesandbox@gmail.com.